recession. However, in an effort to avoid the negative press the recession label receives, the administration of President Joe Biden claimed that a stable unemployment rate meant that the U.S. was not in a recession. That's no longer possible. Due to the so-called Uberization of the United States economy, the official data has long been accused of falsely portraying a rosy picture. The national unemployment rate is 4%, but many say the jobs available are part-time, or lack crucial benefits like health care, or are poorly paid despite the current record inflation.
People looking for benefits, they want to work from home. People are not settling like they used to. It's just a matter of, I don't want to say laziness, but I think people are just, they're trying to get the best that they want, and companies are trying to hold steady and their wages, and they're not willing to pay as much because costs are going up for them as well.
Amid the backfiring of Western sanctions on Russia, many businesses have responded by cutting job listings, slowing the hiring process, and may begin mass layoffs. The widespread perception is that America's central bank is forcing a recession to reduce inflation, even if that means throwing millions out of work, out of their homes, and guts pensions, which are usually based on the stock market. The drop in jobs is the latest piece of data which shows a dangerously worsening economic situation for the average American. Wages are losing ground to inflation at a record pace, and an economically chaotic October could translate into a painful holiday season for many. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
It was the night chaos and violence came to England's Islamic Center as marauding crowds, intent on raising more than their voices, lay siege to the usually peaceful premises. More than a week later, there is still evidence of the violence that boiled over. Amongst the victims that night was a longtime Quran teacher at the center who was set upon by a baying mob.
Suddenly so many people were sitting there standing, started calling me and swearing and shouting, stay, and surrounded me. And the other people came, starting hitting me, kicking me, and swearing, without stopping. And I couldn't understand. I was so surprised from them. So how can the people become this violent? One of them, he kicked me from the over my kidney, and I still have a problem with my kidney. I went to the hospital, saw the doctor, my knee as well. So just had a very big scratch in my knees and bloating. I still have problems with my leg, right leg, and I can't walk properly. After these 10 days, more than 10 days.
Said Mousavi is the director of the center and is leading the charge for justice.
The Islamic Center is following its legal path, and a case against the riots has been filed, and it is ongoing based on document and evidence.
Days after violence rocked the Islamic Center, there is still a visible police presence. And whilst those inside do everything they can to protect themselves and their loved ones, it's hoped that should there be a repeat of this atrocity, the authorities will do more.
Until those responsible are brought to account, there are still questions.
But why they did that in that time, I was so surprised. I think it wasn't only one group. I think it was very small groups of the people who were against Islam and against the humanity, and against their kindness, I think they were like this, some of them.
There is now a call for calm and dialogue as the only paths forward.
If you want people to listen to you and respect your idea, you should respect the idea of the other as well. That is why I want to ask them, please come and talk and have a dialogue with each other. And then with the dialogue, we can listen to different ideas. And of course, even in Quran, we have a specific advice that tells us you should listen to different words and choose the best. But different word, not different attack.
Meanwhile, the Metropolitan Police is continuing its identification of individuals responsible for the anti-Iran violence that spilled over on British streets. Amina Taylor, London.
Leading experts at this European Economic and Social Committee conference in Brussels on Friday said homelessness in the EU has increased by 70% in the past decade. A conservative estimate suggests there are 700,000 homeless people across the 27-country bloc.
We see now with the energy poverty and the increasing vulnerability that are happening around Europe that we are very, very concerned that those figures will also be increasing further. And that's why we believe that it's really important that we all join forces.
Young adults in precarious jobs are in one of the highest risk categories. If you have a mortgage, then repayments are going up due to interest rate hikes. If a landlord has a mortgage, they are passing on extra charges to tenants. Homeless people don't vote. So is there an incentive for politicians to take action?
If in such a short time so much can be done for Ukrainian refugees, and also if so much could be done for homeless people during the corona pandemic, I think we can do the same in the future. It's just a question of political will.
Those who have experienced being homeless say it's a very difficult situation to escape from.
Everybody thinks you are a little bit shady or something like that, and nobody trusts you, and you don't trust anybody. When people start to trust me, I start to doing better things for me, for myself.
Critics say the current economic crisis and resulting social misery could have been avoided if EU leaders had prevented the war in Ukraine through diplomacy. It has been suggested by some political commentators one way the EU could ease its growing homelessness crisis would be for Western nations to adopt a foreign policy that is less aggressive, which would avoid further displacement of millions of more people. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The second Caspian Economic Forum has been held in Moscow. During the event, issues including developing trade and economic cooperation, interaction in the field of ecology, energy, transport and logistics were discussed. Delegations from the Caspian five littoral states, namely Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Iran and Azerbaijan, were present at the event.
The countries of the Caspian region will have to work in the current turbulent conditions of the global economy and geostrategic tensions. The West is putting increasing pressure on other countries in an attempt to maintain the existing world order.
The Caspian region possesses a significant part of the world's gas and oil reserves. It is of high significance, especially at a time when the whole world is facing an unprecedented energy crisis. The Iranian authorities came up with a new proposal to address those issues.
In order to unify and harmonize tariffs for rail, road and sea transportation, expanding trade and economic cooperation, we propose to establish a committee for cooperation in the field of transport, transit and customs business.
The Islamic Republic, given its geographical location, has very good opportunities to conduct operations in the oil and gas sector, as well as providing energy supplies to other regions. Iran has stressed the need to accelerate the unification of the country's electric power networks with those of the Caspian states.
The main purpose of this forum is boosting the economy of regional countries and to enable the Caspian states to use their opportunities to develop trade and economic cooperation, culture and tourism. Also, everyone should not only use the opportunities of the Caspian Sea, but also protect it. We are actively working in the development of the North-South Transport Corridor. The shipping lines of the Islamic Republic of Iran have allocated 300 containers for the transportation of goods to Russia.
Apart from what was said and proposed at the event, the forum also had good news for the member states. Cruise shipping on the Caspian Sea is set to begin in 2023 for the first time in history.
More than 1,000 delegates from the five Caspian Sea littoral states, as well as Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, have taken part in the forum. In the meeting, the participants agreed to adopt decisions to enhance all-out cooperation among countries in the Caspian region. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Thank you. Thousands of Palestinians have rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the outset of the Islamic Jihad movement. People from all walks of life joined to show their support. The Islamic Jihad movement is highly respected by all Palestinian factions and has always been a uniting factor among them. The movement was founded by the late Dr. Fateh Shakaki, who was inspired by the Iranian Revolution and the teachings of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
Today we pay tribute to our founder Fateh Shakaki and all the martyrs. Our path is a very long one and paved by the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Islam and for the sake of Al-Quds.
Ziad al-Nakhala, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, addressed the attendees via satellite link. During his speech, al-Nakhala stressed the unity among all Palestinian factions and praised the axis of resistance against the Israeli regime.
Gaza is part of the axis of resistance, and this rally stresses that armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. People attending this event are affirming their allegiance to the resistance and to the Islamic Jihad movement.
The Islamic Jihad movement and its leaders remain blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime.
We are all here to support the resistance against the Zionist regime. Our people are sending a strong message to the whole world today about their unwavering support for the resistance. We will continue our struggle until the liberation of Al-Quds.
Islamic Jihad supporters want the Israeli regime to know that their movement is a force to be reckoned with.
35 years on, the popularity of the Islamic Jihad movement continues to grow due to the movement's strict adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
A brazen attack has occurred in which an Israeli soldier, as a result, was killed in Al-Quds. This occurred after four Palestinians were shot dead in an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank. Now, whether these incidents are related remains to be seen, but at this point it shows that when a Palestinian wants to act against Israeli forces, it can do so, aside from this being a reaction due to Israeli repression. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why the Israeli-Palestinian conflict remains at the heart of the decades-old conflict in West Asia, and how Israel continues its flagrant violations of Palestinians. First, let's cross on over to occupied Ramallah and talk to Mona Kandil about what has occurred. Mona, at this point, tell us the numbers that have been injured, both on the Palestinian side or killed, and also on the Israeli side, and where things stand at this point.
Well, we have to mention that the manhunt for the Palestinian man, or the suspect, Israeli state, who is behind the shooting, is still underway. Yesterday, a Palestinian get out of a vehicle at a military checkpoint at the entrance to Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds and opened fire at the Israeli soldiers stationing there, killing an Israeli female soldier and wounding others. At least two are in serious condition. The Israelis claimed that the man the identity of the man was revealed from the Shafat refugee camp. The Israeli soldiers succeeded, unfortunately, to arrest four Palestinians. One of them is the brother of this man who carried out the shooting, as the Israeli military is saying. Both, all the four Palestinians who were arrested denied any information. They say that they didn't know that the man would be carrying out a shooting. They said that they stopped the vehicle at the checkpoint. He get out of the vehicle and opened fire. All the entrances, we have to say, leading to Shafat refugee camp were completely closed by the Israeli forces. More Israeli soldiers were sent there. Clashes have taken place between Palestinian residents of the Shafat refugee camp as well as the residents of Anata, the nearby Palestinian town, with the Israeli soldiers. Up till the moment, the manhunt is underway, and the entrances to Shafat refugee camp and Anata town are completely closed. A number of Palestinian groups said that they are responsible for the shooting, but at the same time, experts and the Israeli military believe that this man carried out the shooting by himself, and they know that he was not affiliated to any of the Palestinian resistance groups.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mona Kandil there from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Moti Abu Musaba is a Palestinian political activist that joins us from Gaza City. Also joining us is Mick Napier, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who joins us from Edinburgh. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let me first get an idea from you, Mick Napier, about what has occurred. I mean, we're looking at a brazen attack, the person who decided to do this, which is set to be a revenge attack. It's almost confirmed. A correspondent also confirmed that, where an Israeli soldier was killed. The fact that this person took matters into his hands and went out and did this obviously is one side of the story, but the reasons as to why this has occurred is where we'd like to get a reaction from you on this.
Well, reasons work at several different levels. When we talk about a revenge attack, Israel has been on a killing spree, and it believes that it can kill. It's been young teenagers recently they've been focusing on, quite a few of them children. But Israel believes that it can kill these Palestinians with relative impunity in the West Bank, because they have saturated the area with soldiers, with the world's most advanced surveillance equipment. And therefore they think that the Palestinians are, to use the disgusting language of an earlier Israeli general, are like drugged cockroaches in a bottle, which is what they thought they could reduce the Palestinians to. But they're not drugged and they're not cockroaches. And it's very difficult for the Israelis to cope with the kind of resistance which we've just seen, where a heroic young man, possibly not connected to any other resistance groups, but certainly I would imagine influenced by the current developments and changes in tactics of those resistance groups, the resurgence, not just in Jenin, but spilling over into other areas in the West Bank. He couldn't help but be lifted by this. And the fact that he's been able, nonchalantly, you would almost imagine that he was trained militarily, but that he could emerge from a car and inflict such damage on this massively highly equipped army, which has been terrorizing the West Bank successfully to a degree for a very long time, is quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. And you have to explain it, not just in terms of whether he himself has suffered family members killed or brutalization. This is the small change of life in the West Bank. But whether he feels that the alternative is simply doom, not just for him personally, but for the Palestinian people. Because the Israelis make no secret that their plan is a Palestine without Palestinians. And therefore, given the lack of any alternative to resistance other than humiliation and degradation, increasing numbers of people are choosing the route of armed resistance. How that will go, it's impossible from my armchair to predict, but it's certainly a devastating surprise for the Israelis that Palestinians, after everything they've been through, still resist, and so successfully.
The point that our guest there from Edinburgh makes, Moti Abu Musaba, is a very important one, I think. And I'm wondering what you think about that. And that is the fact that you have somebody that is not related to any particular resistance group, but is a lone person who has decided to react based on the fact that Israel has killed Palestinians and carried out the operation. And that's quite remarkable, because many are now subscribing to that method. Do you think that this is something that is going to keep on increasing as time goes by?
Yes, first of all, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to join you once again. In fact, there is, I think, a wide consensus that the resistance actions against the Israeli occupation in the recent days actually are remarkably increasing. And in my opinion, there are many, there are multiple reasons behind that. The first one is the ongoing and the relentless Israeli suppression and aggression practice against the Palestinians in the West Bank. Today, as you know, the bloodshedding of the Palestinians there is continued since the beginning of this year, as you have mentioned, that since the beginning of this year, 2022, more than 100 Palestinians were killed and murdered by the Israeli occupation in front of the whole world. Needless to mention, the ongoing raids and the continuous storming of Palestinian cities and villages in the West Bank, especially in Nablus and Jenin City. Actually, this goes hand in hand with the deteriorating situation of the economic conditions and the humanitarian conditions. According to the latest records, the unemployment rate actually surpasses 70% among the Palestinian youths there. So this actually ignites the tension on the West Bank. Actually, let's be clear that on the other hand, beside that or in addition to that, Israel deliberately tries to build more and more settlement. Israel tries to create a new de facto on the ground. There is some important an important issue and important reason behind that, which is the ongoing Israeli violations practiced in Al-Aqsa Yards, which actually, as you know, adds fuel to the fire in the West Bank, because the Palestinian people there are watching the Israeli provocations against the Palestinian citizens, against the Palestinian women and elderly there, which actually adds fuel to the fire and increase the tension among those youths. So amid all those provocations, amid all those attacks and aggressions, the Palestinian people have no choice but to resist the Israeli occupation and to defend themselves.
Indeed, those are some very good points that you make in terms of the right to react there. But, you know, what is somewhat interesting here is how the interpretation is made, McNabb, here, when it comes to the way Israel describes the situation. In this case, in point, the Israeli military says that it opens fire only when it's in life-threatening situations. That kind of brings back the explanation given during the last war, where you have the U.S. and the EU come out and say Israel has the right to defend itself. Isn't that code for Israel to shoot and kill?
Of course. And not only will the green light be shone from Washington or Berlin or London, but they will also supply the means for the killing. Look, Israel is very adept at propaganda. It doesn't seem to work with the great majority of people in Europe, actually, but they're still very adept at it. Israel has been caught officers killing children. I myself spoke to the father of a 13-year-old schoolgirl, quite famous was the case, Iman al-Hams, because of an accident recording the soldiers talking. And the officer told his soldiers to kill anything in the area, even if it was 3 years old. And that was played on Israeli television. And I was looking through some old anniversaries yesterday and came upon the example, I was shocked, but I don't know why, of the Israeli general who found a group of Egyptians during one of the wars. And they were captives, they were quarry workers, they were not soldiers, they were completely unarmed. And the story is not that he killed all of them, he did, he slaughtered these civilians, but that much later he boasted about it in Israeli media. And there was no backlash, there were no charges, no investigation. So if you murder civilians, Egyptian or Palestinian, Lebanese or whatever, and then boast about what you have done in Israel, you can do this with complete impunity. So the Americans have an intelligence agency, so do the British. It's not that they don't know. They know exactly the barbarity of the Israelis. They know this because they've studied it. And for a very short time, the British were on the receiving end of it, very short before they restructured the alliance. So they know exactly what Israel's doing in terms of killing children, deliberately killing children. There have been UN reports in the last couple of years which say very clearly Israel is indiscriminately killing civilians in Gaza at that time and is indiscriminately killing children. During the Great March of Return, the UN reported that Israel was killing journalists, medical workers, and children, and it said knowing that they were children and knowing who they were. So there's no secret. You don't have to be a radical or a dissident. Anybody who wants to find out can find this out from unimpeachable resources. Sure. What the Palestinians live under is a most barbaric and murderous regime. And that explains one thing. People under colonial domination, the naked violence, let's say, which what colonialism is, many people just try to live, you know. They don't want to fight. There's a minority who want to fight. There's a minority who want to collaborate always. But most people in the middle just try to feed their families and live and put up with some humiliation. But they begin to resist in the mass when they realize that they cannot live in this way, that the Israelis will not allow them to live in this way, that the humiliation and the killings will be incessant and will increase until Palestinians are driven out. So we can look at the tactics of the resistance. They're very impressive. They're changing in a way that they've evolved tactics which are keeping the Israelis wrong-footed. But the rising resistance can be laid at the door, one, of the Israelis, and two, of the indomitable Palestinian ability to absorb tremendous punishment and still continue to resist. Can I just add one thing?
Go ahead.
100 Palestinians killed, and they've managed to kill, I think, 19 or 20 Israelis. Now, that's horrible, and I don't want to sound callous, but you know, normally, in an anti-colonial resistance, it can be 100 to 1. In Vietnam, it was 60 to 1. You know, in Algeria, it was roughly 100 Algerians killed for every French occupier. So what the Palestinian resistance is achieving at very high cost, I don't want to minimize the cost, is quite remarkable.
Yeah, you both have talked about this figure, which is accurate in terms of 100 being killed. And what is really sad about this figure, that this is five times as many Palestinians that have been killed in the same period in 2021, where we mentioned 100. So bad that the UN Human Rights Chief, Michel Bachelet, has expressed alarm at the high number of Palestinians, including children, that have been killed and or injured in the occupied Palestinian territory this year. Muti Abu Musab, why do you think that Israel has put his killing machine, as some call it, in high gear this year?
Yes, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces are trying to impose a new de facto on the ground. They are racing counter the clock to impose the new realities on the ground, to seize more Palestinian lands, armed with the open American support and the abhorrent silence of the international community towards those crimes. So Israel, as good as possible, tries to suppress more Palestinians, to steal more Palestinian lands, trying to exploit the tumultuous region and the instability and the global fronts, especially with regard to the Ukrainian and Russian crisis nowadays. But anyway, as you know, that Palestinians would never allow the Israelis and the Israeli occupation to keep committing its crimes without any punishment or without any response. And actually, what is going on the ground with this regard actually reveals the hypocrisy of the international community and the U.S. administration that speaks up when it comes to the Ukrainian issue, when it comes to the Ukrainian regions annexed by the Russian forces and the Russian government. They are speaking up and trying to denounce that kind of annexation. But when it comes to the Palestinian people, we are witnessing how the Israeli occupation forces are annexing the Palestinian or have been annexing the Palestinian lands for more than seven decades without having any response from the international community or the U.S. administration. Actually, this reveals clearly how hypocrite and how biased the international community to the Israeli occupation at the expense of the Palestinian people. Today, the Palestinian people, amid all that kind of bias, have no choice but to resist the Israeli occupation and to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing its crimes.
Well, this is the problem here, McNapier, that I see it being a problem of perception, that the Israelis, backed by their media conglomerates that they control, always paint the picture that they are being the victim. For example, if you have a Palestinian that attacks them, that Palestinian is called a terrorist. But when you have one of their security sources or forces, kill a Palestinian, then they're defending Israel's security. Our guests have talked about the Ukraine conflict. Again, a matter of perception. Who's being the aggressor there? Is Russia being the aggressor, or are they being the ones that were being provoked and being cornered after 6 years of a war, for example? And I'm using that just as a comparative analysis there. This view of the perception is what we're looking at. But do you think slowly but surely Israel is losing that battle because so many people are becoming aware of the Palestinian cause?
No, I don't think that Israel is slowly losing the battle. I don't think so at all. I think if you study the numbers, polls commissioned by the European Union, recent polls in America, for that matter, in the last few weeks, Israel long ago lost the battle for public opinion. And it's very important to note that. It's not what I want to believe, it's what anybody who looks at the results of public opinion studies must conclude, that by their resistance, Palestinians have been able to defeat Israel in the court of public opinion. Now, I don't mean in terms of what's allowed to be discussed publicly in Britain or Germany or America. That's a different matter. I have spent years in court on criminal charges for Palestine advocacy. There's an attempt to silence people here, just as there is to call human rights groups in the West Bank terrorist groups. Israel does it there, our governments do it here. But in terms of what people believe, they already are deeply suspicious of Israel. An opinion poll after opinion poll shows that Israel is deeply unpopular, viewed as sinister, viewed as a thug and a bully by popular opinion. Now, that needs to be translated into active energy, boycott, divestment, and sanctions around the world. But that's the reality we start with. So I don't think Israel's slowly losing it. It's very important to understand they lost it a long time ago, and they have never recovered public support. It's gone. It's gone completely.
Okay, we need to talk about the Islamic Jihad, and they actually have supported what has happened because of the bravery of the person that came out and did this. So my question to you, Muti Abu Musabe, was there was just the founding anniversary that was held a few days back in Gaza by the Islamic Jihad, and on display were some new military equipment and some other various forms of military equipment in addition to the new ones. Are we looking at Israel taking note of the Islamic Jihad, its strength that's been elevated, increased compared to the past, including other resistance groups like Hamas, and seeing that, you know, they are not at a strong point when it comes to the armed aspect, when it comes to, for example, resistance groups vis-a-vis Israel and their forces?
Yes, as you know that today the Palestinian resistance factions actually are standing united in the front of the Israeli occupation, and they are races counter the clock to develop their abilities and to enhance their abilities to confront the Israeli occupation crimes. Today, it's just a matter of time for any kind of escalation to break out between the Palestinian resistance factions and the Israeli occupation forces, especially amid the ongoing and the relentless Israeli crimes and violations, which actually makes any kind of a new escalation or a new round of escalation is so close. So amid all these conditions, the Palestinian resistance factions, especially or led by Hamas movement and the Islamic Jihad, are obliged to be united in the front of the Israeli occupation to have a strong unity. We as Palestinians realize that we cannot face the Israeli occupation separately, okay, or divided. The strategic choice we have here is to keep maintaining our unity in front of the Israeli occupation, and sure, to develop our abilities to confront the Israeli occupation forces.
Last question, quickly, if you can, McNapier. I thought this was a very important point made, where Palestinian security forces said the military raids that Israel does, in conjunction with them, actually undermine their credibility and public support, especially in the absence of a political process, which is non-existence. I think that was a very interesting point. Are we looking at any chance of a political process anytime soon?
Impossible, because the Israelis have never been willing to enter a genuine political process. They believe in technical superiority, technological, military arms, mean that they don't need to negotiate with the Palestinians. They can simply control them prior to removing them. The PA has passed its sell-by date. If it had a sell-by date, it should simply disappear. It's an agent of the Israeli occupation, and the rising resistance levels in the West Bank make their future very, sure, very uncertain indeed.
Thank you for that. Sorry, we're fresh out of time. That's McNapier there, Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you. Muti Abu Musabe, a pleasure. Palestinian political activist from Gaza City. Thank you so much. And we had Mona Kandil at the top of the hour, our correspondent from Ramallah. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tavway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Watching a rainbow in the sky is beautiful, but the idea of watching a rainbow in the mountains seems to be fictional. However, this fantasy becomes so real when you describe this phenomenon in geology. Tomorrow, I'll take a trip to Hormuz Island to watch this awesome, colorful landscape, which is known as the Rainbow Valley. Hormuz Island, which is located in the Persian Gulf, has an area of 42 square kilometers. This great Iranian island is home to one of the wonders of nature called the Rainbow Valley. The Rainbow Valley, which is located southwest of the island, is a narrow valley with multicolored soil surrounded by colorful mountains. It is painted with more than 70 colors and a variety of stones and minerals, which make this place an interesting destination for geologists. The minerals include black, white, and gray dolomites, pyrite, gypsum, anhydrite, apatite, and iron oxides. The color of the soil ranges from white, yellow, red, green, orange, beige, to brown, light turquoise, and even gold. The yellow, red, silver, and black colors are mainly of clay and iron oxide compounds, while the white, blue, pink, and gray are made of volcanic compounds. Well, I am now on a passenger boat. It's about 40 minutes from Haqqani Port in Bandar Abbas to Hormuz Island. I'm so excited to see this attraction. Just imagine, so many colors on the earth. Looks like a colorful Persian carpet. Amazing! Well, I am now in Hormuz Island. The beauties of this island are not for you. The mountains surrounding the valley are so beautiful. Oh, look. A yellow-colored rock with red, blue, and pink pieces of a stone around it. Very interesting. What doubles the beauty of the Rainbow Valley is the blue sky and the vast Persian Gulf. There are different colors here, but the red color has more share in this rainbow. Oh, masterpiece of nature. Extraordinary, you can't believe it. Well, I can't take my eyes off all these beauties. It's a really different experience. You have to see here yourself. Oh, look at there. Local women who are wearing traditional clothes are selling handicrafts. Let me see. A shellfish necklace. Yes, I want this. Actually, I don't like to leave this island, but I have to. This island is so special. Listen, sound of waves, seagulls. Oh, it's like a new birth. So, let me take a walk on the shore before leaving this island. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.